You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In the spring of 1975, Pat Brown was trying to decide whether to run for re-election as California's Attorney General or to run for governor or maybe be the state's next U.S. Senator. His son Jerry was 19 years old at the time in seminary, and he sent a letter. "Dear Dad, I thought I could write and give you a few of my ideas about your impending decision. The basic question seems to me to boil down to this: where will you have the best opportunity of doing the most for God and country, which two ends are necessarily the same?" The letter then looks toward the bigger role, in Jerry's view, as senator for his dad, afraid that his dad might lose a run for governor. And he finishes, "Love, Jerry. P.S. My advice, make a retreat and ask God's help. You can't do it all alone." Well, as history tells us, Pat decided to run for governor and won, and the family's political history began. The letter is one of many details in a new book by the award-winning author Miriam Powell. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. She was chosen by the Brown family to write this comprehensive history, and her book is titled "The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Shaped a Nation, The Browns of California." Miriam will be at the State Library a little later today. I'm glad she's beginning this day with us. Hello and welcome.
Hi, thanks.
That's a much longer introduction than I would usually do, but I thought that letter was such an example of how Pat Brown continuously sought counsel and Jerry Brown continuously shot for something higher and bigger.
It's a great letter, and it's one of many that are thanks to Pat Brown's passion for saving history that we have in the archives. Can I correct you on two little tiny things?
Sure.
You said, not, I think it was just a misstep. You said in the spring of 1975, but it was actually in the spring of 1958 when Jerry was a seminarian and his father was Attorney General. The other thing, just to clarify, nobody chose me to write this, actually. I just proposed it. It was my idea. I got interested in listening to the governor talk about his ancestors, the Shuckmans, which he's been talking about a lot in State of the States. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to write next and just got very interested in that idea of going back and tracing your roots in this family. And so I had a conversation with him and then came up with the idea to do this. And he did cooperate and the family cooperated, but it was in no way their idea or authorized. It was my own initiative.
I'm sure many people proposed this to him, however. So
that's an interesting, I don't know. That's a good question. That would be a question for him. I don't know. It's odd to me that, in fact, so little has been written about the family. I mean, there's one very good biography of Pat Brown by Ethan Rarick, who's right at Berkeley. But, you know, Pat Brown was such a towering figure in this state in his own right in terms of the legacy that he's left in very physical ways. And there's really very little written. There's a lot written about Jerry Brown in the 70s when he was running for president a lot. There was a whole flurry of books. But I don't know that any, you know, there had not been much effort to connect them. And to me, it was a story about California and about history. And really that, you know, again, that sort of the Shuckmans and the pioneer August Shuckman, who arrived in 1852 in Colusa and started this whole saga, it just struck me how it paralleled the history of the state. California becomes a state in 1850. So that was what intrigued me about it.
A remarkable amount happened in the state.
Yes.
Some of the biggest events over the span of these four generations. The book begins with a moment of reflection, mm-hmm, actually in the preface, that seemed to be very powerful to you. And it's a moment with the current Governor Brown.
Mm-hmm. We're giving away secrets of the book. There's a scene that it begins with the idea of the mansion. And to me, place is very important. And I think to him, place is very important. Obviously, he's very connected to the land, to the, you know, there were natural bookends for me in the idea that August Shuckman came, settled in Colusa on the land where Jerry Brown is building his retirement home. And that sort of was such an arc. So the land is important, and the mansion, the governor's house, was important to me in the sense of anchoring the family and the saga and his decision to live there again the second time after he had quite, you know, famously not lived in the governor's mansion the first time around. So there was a conversation that I had with him there where he reflected on his history in the house and where he lived only briefly when his father was governor, when he was studying for the bar.
I appreciate that you began with the mansion because for me as a reader, it was an easy way in to think, I'm not going to be overwhelmed by trying to read and learn mm-hmm. about this entire history of this massive family, which seems mountainous. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in your research, the extensive interviews, the libraries of material, the books, the letters, the photos, endless stories, and people really, it seemed, opened up because this is a massive journalistic effort.
It's sort of a combination journalist historian. I sort of in the many years since I've left newspapers, have become more of a historian, viewed myself more as a historian in some sense because I spend so much time in archives. And it's so I try to write so rooted from things that were said and written and done, in contemporaneous history as opposed to people recalling later because memory is so tricky. But I think you speak to what was one of the hardest parts about the book, which was figuring out what to write, what not to write. How do you write a story of this family and the state of California and in a way that is readable, digestible? And so for me, it was a matter of identifying the themes that I think are, I spent a lot of time thinking about and talking to people about what makes California special and different and how does this family exemplify it.
The roots and the timeline parallel the development of California. It's hard to see whether Pat Brown, for example, was driving that mm-hmm. development quickly or whether it was happening and he was just trying to ride along with it and make the best decisions that he could with his circle of advisors.
That's a great way of framing it. Probably a little bit of both, not to weasel out of that answer, but I think probably more the latter in some sense. I mean, the phenomenal growth of California post-war and the war and the post-war years is a real dividing line for the state because so many people came. I don't remember the numbers, but the numbers of people who were arriving after the war plus the baby boom drove this need for schools, for city halls, for roads, for colleges and so forth. And Pat Brown was sort of the perfect person for that era because it fit his spirit. And then not to take away from him in the sense of he's not a visionary in the same way that his son is a visionary in a lot of ways. But he did, in water, for example, really feel a commitment to the idea that there had to be water in Southern California because the people were going to come regardless and there had to be water for them. So that was a way, I think, in which he did look ahead to the future of the state and play a big role in it.
The timing is so intriguing to read about the water effort that was going on then in light of what we're in the midst of right now. And that happens more than once in the book.
Yeah. I mean, again, because of the themes that are so key to California, water, the environment, the outdoors. I mean, the environment is such a different issue here. It's largely by, I was sort of fascinated to find out what a strong environmentalist Ronald Reagan was as governor, which people don't think of at all. But it was under the Reagan administration that some of the key environmental issues were set up. And that, I think, foreshadows some of the bipartisanship you see now, even on cap and trade and things like that.
You lead us through how Jerry Brown became the central international figure that he is now mm-hmm. on climate change. I do want to go back, though, when you talk about themes, how much the development of the UC system mm-hmm. and the establishment of higher education, it gave me a different window on where Jerry Brown has been in the last two terms as governor in the debate in the state about UC tuitions and higher education. It was really powerful for this family and in his father's time.
Very powerful for the family. And Pat Brown, who did not go to college but went directly from high school to law school, we talked about my university. His wife, Jerry's mother, who was quite brilliant and was one of the youngest students at UC. I think she was 14 or 15 when mm-hmm. she started college at Berkeley, at Cal. That university is a central part of the family. They give a lot of money to it. And, of course, the master plan under Pat Brown is still the governing document and sort of badly in need of being updated, actually. But for me, that was essential. I mean, from the beginning, again, of statehood in the Constitution, the commitment to accessible higher education in California has been a real theme.
Let me tap a couple quick things just before we move on to go way back in time. August Shuckman married a woman named Augusta.
Yes.
That was funny to me.
I know. And then their oldest son was named August.
August. Right? I know that,
yeah,
that whole family.
A bit of a lack of originality there.
You just talked about Cal Berkeley being so important and then Kathleen going to Stanford.
Right.
And the rebel that Kathleen was and some of the trouble that she stirred and then how she kind of morphed and moved into the family tradition over time.
So Kathleen Round is the youngest of the four children of Pat and Bernice and definitely, you know, had a different upbringing really because her father was elected governor when she was 13. So she grew up in that world. And she, yes, was determined to go to Stanford and went over the great objections of her father, who thought she should go to Cal like everyone else in the family, and really thrived at Stanford and founded a very exciting environment. And she's also the only one who's lived for significant amounts of time outside of California, although she has come back and is here now.
The women in the Brown family are important, intriguing characters. And I'm going to add Anne Gust Brown into that whole category because she really fits with the kind of women that had an important rooting place for all the men.
Absolutely. I'm really glad that you saw that out of the book. Jerry's grandmother, Ida Shuckman Brown, who was the youngest daughter of August Shuckman, very powerful figure in the family. A lot of her grandchildren are still around and a lot of people who knew her, and everyone talks about her as being an anchor in the family, very smart, self-educated, you know, comes to San Francisco turn of the century and just sort of absorbs everything in the city. And Bernice Brown, who was, you know, extremely smart and strong. So there's a tradition of strong women in that family, and Anne Gust Brown would certainly fit in that pattern.
And I said anchoring the men, but these are women in their own right. And had they lived in a different time,
exactly,
they might have made some different choices, but they were powerful people.
That's another thing that is sort of was fascinating to me. I mean, to sort of look at what the role of women was and how it changed over time. And someone like Bernice Brown, who could have done many, many things, and her oldest daughter, Barbara, who was also quite brilliant, and you know, but grew up in a 1950s world where women got married and had kids, and that's what you did. And so that transition, and Kathleen really becomes the first Brown to have, the first woman in the family to have a strong independent career on her own.
You're listening to Miriam Powell. We're talking about her new book, The Browns of California. It traces the family history of Governor Brown's family back to his great-grandfather's arrival in Colusa County. Miriam is the author of The Crusades of Cesar Chavez, a biography. And that book was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award and a winner of the California Book Award. Miriam will be in conversation at the State Library in Sacramento today from 11:30 to 1. I think you're in conversation with Dan Moran,
aren't
you?
I am, indeed.
There is some interesting Kennedy history here, and I was fascinated a small conversation that I'll read. Kennedy called the mansion to congratulate Pat Brown, and the two agreed that Nixon was finished. I'll tell you this, you reduced him to the nut house. God, that last farewell speech of his, Kennedy said. I don't see how he can recover. And Pat said, I really think he's psychotic. He's an able man, but he's nuts. And before he hung up, Pat asked the president for a favor. Would you do one thing for me? Just say hello to my son, Jerry, who just came back from Yale Law School and really put me over in San Francisco. And the president greeted Jerry, who assured Kennedy that he would carry California by 10 times as much as you did before. It's a small paragraph, but the interlacing of the family and the time and history in that, I find indelible to think about.
Yeah, and there's actually an audio recording of that that's online that people can listen to. The amount, I have to say that the amount of material that is being digitized like more and more every day is just incredible resource for amateur and professional historians.
We talked at the beginning when I referenced that letter about father and son. So that father-son relationship comes up in many different ways over time. At first, Pat Brown is all of everything in center stage. And then there's a time when his son, who has taken the political reins, doesn't even invite him on stage.
Right. And very pointedly doesn't. And that's when he, in 1974, when Jerry won the Democratic primary, which was a pretty seriously contested race with against more experienced people. So, I mean, clearly he wanted to separate himself and his identity, but it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, when he first runs for office for the Community College Board in 1969, he runs as Edmund G. Brown Jr., even though, of course, everyone knew him then as they do now as Jerry. But his father had only been out of office for 3 years at that point. He lost in 1966. So, you know, and he comes in first out of 140 candidates because everyone knew the name. Mm-hmm. So he was very aware and very honest and open about the fact that without that name, he probably would not have gotten elected. He would not have gotten elected Secretary of State in 1970. And yet also clearly, you know, wanted to establish his own identity. And in addition to whatever sort of father-son dynamic, they are very different people. They share some very strong core values. But Jerry Brown coming in as governor in 1975 in the post-Watergate era, 36, 37 years old, you know, had very different ideas and so rejects all his father's or 90% of his father's suggestions for appointments. Not necessarily because they're his father's suggestions, but because that is not his crowd. I mean, mm-hmm. he is interested in changing the dynamic and the composition of state government.
There is much here in the history of California and the pathway that you trace that makes it logical that the state right now would oppose so much mm-hmm. of Trump administration policies. And I think that had people been able to read this book, it's kind of plain as day where the state would be.
Yeah, on the key issues, I mean, the one that we haven't talked about yet is immigration and right. immigrants and how California, you know, from its foundation in the 1800s was a state of immigrants. And that being a core value for the state and also for this family, Ida Brown, Jerry's grandmother, very strong civil rights supporter of or then Negro rights, Pat Brown pushing the fair housing bills and fair employment and really partly losing because on that issue. So there's a very strong strain throughout that family of a commitment. Kathleen Brown, when she ran for governor in 1994 against Pete Wilson. Was the year of Prop 187, of course, and she came out early and very strong against 187 and just said there's no way that I, as a Brown, could support this.
And just in terms of these parallels, Jerry Brown was running for re-election when voters were deciding Prop 13.
Correct.
And that's been hugely significant. I need about 2 hours of your time to get through all of this. One question that intrigued me, do you see a future Brown politician in the family amongst the many of the younger generation that are there right now who might rise up to the statewide political level?
Hard. I'm, you know, a historian, not a futurist, but I would of Pat Brown's grandchildren, the oldest, Kathleen Kelly, is a judge in San Francisco. She's in the book a bit as well and has been done some really interesting work in juvenile justice in the city of San Francisco and been involved in public office. And there are a couple of teachers in the family also. I don't know. There also was a cousin of Jerry's who was a public defender for a long time in San Francisco. So there's some continuation in the younger years, but not that much.
Did you come away feeling surprised?
Surprised? Like by what?
Well, I would ask you that.
But
you pulled the curtains back on a family in a way that no one has. I feel like you gave us a compilation of so much of what is out there that no one could find in one pathway or going right. down one historical rabbit hole.
You know, I mean, there were things that surprised me along the way. I was very, I mean, I try to go into things as open-minded as possible. So it wasn't that I was surprised as much as sort of, I would say, struck by, for example, the importance of the Jesuits and the Jesuit influence on the governor. I found that quite fascinating. Spent a lot of time learning about the Jesuits, talking to people who were in his class at the seminary, and that whole strain. And then the other thing I would say is sort of, I think, how California-rooted this family is. I mean, I don't... Jerry Brown is friends with people he grew up, who lived on the street where he grew up. You know, the house that he grew up in is still owned by Browns, and who've raised, it's that they're on the third generation of raising family there. So there's that connection to the land and to the place that I found to be, you know, quite remarkable and different. I grew up in New York. My friends live all over the place, you know, but there's this sort of a centeredness here that's interesting considering how huge the state is. And sort of, so I'd say that identity of being a Californian and what it means was interesting to me and enlightening.
At about the time of the end of his era, I'd like to have you come back, Miriam, because there's so many stories and there is so much to talk through. And this is just part one of our conversation, okay?
That would be great. I'd love to.
I appreciate the book and I appreciate you being here to talk about it.
Thanks. It was
Thank
a pleasure.
Thank you so much. That is author and journalist Miriam Powell. She will be at the State Library in Sacramento in just a bit. She'll be in conversation with Dan Morain at 11:30. And by the way, since we're talking politics, if you are following the Kavanaugh hearings on Capitol Hill, you can see and hear the coverage of the hearings at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
Destruction.